Thank you for joining us at Beerfish Fanatics. And this episode is actually brought to you by Whisker Seeker Tackle.
So make sure you guys go to whiskerseeker.com for all your catfishing gear.
Enjoy the episode, guys. All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Beerfish Fanatics. This is Granny with Ma Pop Fishing. We got
Kit with the Fishing Kit YouTube channel.
And today we are in the presence of somebody who's way more professional than us in regards to doing podcasting and recording and fishing and all the good stuff. If you guys haven't, you know, heard about her, I think you guys should go check her out. I'll give the links and everything here, but we have April Vokey. She's with Anchored Outdoors, Anchored Podcasts. You're with a lot of cool stuff that I've seen online and everything. So thank you so much, April, for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. And just to kind of give everybody a heads up, we're going to be drinking beer because it's evening time here in Midwest Iowa. So April, it's a little early for her for beer. It's, you know, 10 a.m. coffee time, right?
That's me. I'm a little jealous. If it was just a little later, if it was noon, you might get me on a red wine, but no, I'm on coffee for this morning.
All right. Quick shout out to our sponsor, Kolota Brewing Company. I'm actually trying something new today, Kit. I actually got the, okay, it's called the Philosopher Series. It's called Coffee with, gosh darn, I'm going to rip. I can't pronounce it. I should have asked you how to pronounce this, Kit. Is it Kierkegaard? How do you pronounce that, Kit?
You're asking the wrong person.
Oh, dang it. All right, April, do you know how to pronounce that?
Yeah, I think it's Kierkegaard.
Gosh darn it, see? So easy, that just rolled off the tongue.
But I know a couple of guys with the last name Kierkegaard. They're missing the E in the front, but it's yeah, huh. I would assume Kierkegaard.
All right, it's a coffee cream ale, so that's what I'm drinking today. What do you got, Kit?
I got the Kelowna Classic for like the fifth episode in a row.
It's a good light beer.
Yeah, it's your light lager. I may have had a late night last night, so I'm taking it easy today.
So if you ever come to the Midwest or come near us, April, we'll definitely take you out to this brewery. It's really good. They're pretty cool. They're really nice people, and their beer's really it's really amazing, actually. So
cheers.
Coffee. And that does have some coffee. See, I'm having coffee with you, April. Look at that shit. Dope.
Oh, yeah. Hey, see, look at you. You're organized.
There you go. So, and like I was mentioning to everybody listening, watching, April is part of, can you explain to us and tell us, okay, what is Anchored Outdoors? I know a little bit about it, but I didn't want to go too depth into researching because I want you to tell the story, your story, and just kind of illustrate to us what is Anchored Outdoors and what is April Vokey all about?
Yeah, cool. Well, Anchored Outdoors is still pretty new. It all started with the podcast. I mean, you guys would know this. It starts really fun, right? It was all underground and just a labor of love, which the podcast still is, by the way. And I really wanted to create a show where we could hear from people who usually don't have a platform or voices. So a lot of older people who are really interesting, by the way. I don't think that we give our elders the credit that we should. These guys and these women and men are badasses. Some of these people survived through concentration camps. I mean, they've seen things we couldn't even begin to imagine. So to sit with them until COVID, all of my podcast episodes were recorded in person. So, you know, you go into their homes and you might be recording for 2 hours, but you're there for eight and you really get this look into their lives. And what started happening was the show started to build momentum. And I realized I was leaving a lot of stuff out because it was an audio show, right? You couldn't see them or they were talking about a skill that they perfected and I couldn't showcase it. So I eventually decided to start Anchored Outdoors, which is really just taking the podcast to the next level. So now Anchored Outdoors is a membership. We also sell master classes, and it's really the community of all of the podcast guests who now write for Anchored Outdoors. They teach for Anchored Outdoors. It's taking their story and bringing it to life. Mm-hmm. So obviously the listener understands the person's story, but now they get to take it one step further and go into their house and really be brought into their, you know, into their workshop to learn more about what it is that they teach. So it's just taking the podcast to the next level. And that's it in a nutshell.
And keep in mind, everybody, her podcast has been around way longer than us. So if they're taking that to the next level, holy cow. You guys got to go check it out.
Yeah, the podcast has been around for seven. I think we're in seven seasons now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And
yeah, it's been cool, but it happened. So I launched Anchored Outdoors in February last year. And it was right as COVID was starting to kick off. So the timing was just surreal. And there were all these people who wanted to be, they were looking for community, and which is, of course, I'm all about community. It's my favorite thing in the world. And so we were really able to bring everyone together during dark times, but also pay, you know, I write a lot of checks. And to a lot of these guys and gals, they had no income coming in. So it was really good timing. So yeah, I'm very proud of it. I love our members more than anything else. It's constantly evolving. Like, when is the show airing?
Probably in 2 weeks, Kit?
I would say a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting timing. We're just about to launch our full new membership, which is badass. It's the only membership that pays. It's about to be the only membership that pays its members to use it. So I'll just leave it at that. It's super cool. Yeah. So it's going through an evolution. If you're listening to the show and you visit and you're like, oh, what's the deal? It's about to get really awesome. So stay tuned.
Okay. Can you explain? You said it's a membership program currently. So what is a member getting right now when they sign up?
Yeah. So we have obviously a bunch of great content, which, you know, you can roll your eyes. There's great content everywhere. but it also, you know, you get a handful of masterclasses, and our masterclasses are just fantastic. We have interactive events. So you get to obviously meet with us every month and tie with some of the best people in the industry. What else? Giveaways, you know, the basic things that when I started the membership, there weren't very many fishing memberships, and now people are trying to, you know, hop on board. So it all seems to be the same thing. You get special perks and discounts, you get interactive events, this, that, and the other thing. But what was really missing in the membership, we're not changing the masterclasses. The masterclasses are golden. They are doing awesome. Our members are getting results, and that's what we're all about, is watching somebody go from, I've never even, you know, thought about making a bamboo rod, to sending us photos of bamboo rods that they've learned through Bob Clay. Which makes me kind of backtrack a bit. What they're getting is access to people in the industry they would never get access to. And I'm not talking, you just take a masterclass and that's it. You never hear from us again. I mean, our instructors are there. They're there to talk to you. They're there to have video calls. They're in the community section answering questions. These are people you would never have access to. But the one thing that was missing, in my opinion anyway, is I like a membership. I'm a member of certain companies outside of fishing. It's got to be results driven. So I want to know, if I start here, that you're going to get me this, right? I'm willing to put in the work, but I need you to help me get here. And so the new membership is what we're calling the Connect approach. So it's really an A to Z. We've got a whole curriculum in a 6-phase program that starts you from never having held a rod in your life. The membership is focusing just on fly fishing now. We're slowly getting rid of all the other distractions, focusing just on fishing. And what happens is you basically start at A, and all of the curriculum is taught by guests of the show. So people you already know. And yeah, anyway, I'll save all the details. But at the end of each phase, you take certain quizzes, and there's certain assignments. So it's basically coaching, and you collect points. And so the points go into your dashboard, and those points have a dollar value. Each point is worth a dollar. And then you can use those points to buy masterclasses, Anchored Outdoors merchandise. You can buy stuff for friends off the website. So it really is this fantastic incentive to help you use your membership and get the results from your membership so that you can be a better angler.
That's super cool.
I'm glad that's pretty cool.
Because, you know, hey, first of all, I suck at fishing. Oh, I would say I suck at fishing. I do the best I can. Right? This guy helps me as much as he can, but sometimes he's like, okay, I can't even help you, Grandy. You're on your own. But stuff like that. Thanks, man. It will definitely help me out. But I, you know what? You know, I was looking, you know, a little bit into you and everything, because so people, if you guys don't know, you used to be a fly fishing guide, correct? Because I think you used to do a lot of fly fishing. So this is the thing. I know nothing about fly fishing. I know Kit has got into it a little bit. I know nothing. That's why I really wanted to bring you on, because can you help someone like myself that I am really curious? I really want to look into fly fishing. I look at it. It looks really difficult. I have a hard enough time catching anything on a bait caster and a spinning reel as is. Do I want to make it more difficult? That's my only question. But what would be like your first couple tips for somebody who's thinking about it or looking to get into fly fishing?
Well, opening your mind to it. So I also fish conventional gear still. And you know, yeah, I guided for 10 years. But I fished for way, you know, I fished for years before I started guiding. And I started with a spinning rod, like most of us do. And then I obviously moved into a bait caster. And then being a Pacific Northwest girl, I eventually moved to a center pin. And then at some point, I was just looking for a little bit extra challenge. So when it comes to salmon and steelhead and certain species, I say, yes, with fly fishing, you're probably making it more difficult. Now, there are certain fisheries that just doesn't make sense, you know. I'm probably more likely, if I'm going out to get meat, it makes sense to probably put a bit of bait on and go and get the job done. But if you're going after a species like steelhead, for example, and it's an experience and you want to go out and enjoy the day and you've got 10 hours between where you put your raft in and where you pull your raft out, but maybe the fishery's declining a bit because let's be honest, that's what's happening right now in wild steelhead fisheries. And maybe you only want to catch one or two fish that day to stretch your day out. Well, maybe fly fishing is going to be a better choice for you because it's going to, you are going to catch fewer fish, but you get to really slow down, focus, meditate, just kind of be aware, focus on your skill. Now, the next step to, or the next part of the answer to your question is we need to remember that fly fishing, it can be more productive or more efficient or effective than bait fishing. So there are times if we went bass fishing, for example, there are times where the fly will outfish you on a conventional rod. Now, I'm not saying always, but there are situations where the fly is going to be more effective. So for example, let's say the fish are slurping on big mayflies. How are you going to, you know, imitate a mayfly? It's almost impossible, right?
Yeah.
Whereas with fly fishing, if anyone's listening right now, what is fly fishing anyway? Fly fishing, rather than using the weight of your lure or your, you know, weight to deliver your hook. Let's just keep it simple, your hook to the fish. Well, fly fishing is utilizing the weight of the fly line to deliver your hook to the fish. So the fly line is 100 feet long. And in the first 30 or 40 feet of that fly line, it's quite heavy. It's weighed in what we call grains. And so it's quite heavy. And so this grain weight is designed to act as a pendulum. So as you really get the momentum going, it's going to load your rod. And as you let it go, that pendulum is going to pull all that weight forward. So you can, in a nutshell, cast this tiny little fly that weighs the same as this little bit of tissue. You know, look at how light that is when it falls. Mm-hmm. But because we've got this heavy fly line, it can cast this little bit of weight, you know, anywhere from 30 to 70 to 90, depending on how good of a caster you are, feet to that fish. Now, I've fished enough. I mean, I was fishing gear this weekend, conventional gear this weekend. I know that if I'm fishing a little tiny plastic, soft plastic or something, that it's still really hard to deliver something that small that far.
Yeah.
So fly fishing can, in some situations, can cast farther, but also you can put on flies that or a bait that the fish is focusing on that you can't deliver with your spinning rod. You can, this is my favorite part, quick pickups and laydowns, right? So there's a fish here and all of a sudden that fish is gone, but there's one here. When I'm still trying to reel in, going to take me forever, you know, the frantic reel to try to redeliver.
Yep.
You don't have to do that. You literally go, oh shit, you pick it up, you redeliver, and you cast it back down again, right? So you've got that situation. Because all of your weight is distributed evenly, you cast over lily pads and stuff. I mean, I love trick casts, so I love like casting underneath logs and stuff, or like trying to jump my fly over logs. You can cast over a tree branch, and I mean, you can do that with some braid and stuff too, but you can just be a little bit more tricky with the fly rod. So there are a number of reasons why fly fishing can be more effective. So my advice to people is if you want to be a really skilled angler, know how to do everything. And that goes for the fly fishermen and women too. You know, don't be a snob. Know how to fish a spinning rod. Know how to fish bait. You should know how to do everything. So
I like that. Know how to do everything. I think you kind of sold me on it. I'm not going to lie. I was really contemplating it at the beginning of the year, but I'm just like, man, I'm already not that good. But now what you're just explaining, It's interesting. It makes a lot of sense.
It does. And honestly, with four kids, I can't even imagine what your brain goes through. I have one. And so, you know, to be able to slow down, right? Because fishing gear, especially for bass, can be really, it's just intense, right?
Yeah.
But with fly fishing, it can still be intense, but you do have to just slow down because you have to, with spinning gear, right? Obviously, everything's quite quick and sharp. I'm like fly casting my spinning gear, but you know what I mean? Everything's quick and sharp. But with fly fishing, everything needs to slow down because you need to allow that line to unroll behind you. Mm-hmm. So while you're waiting for your line to unroll, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, you have to slow down. So it really is great for your brain to just chill.
Yeah. So like I've dabbled in fly fishing a little bit. I bought my first fly rod, I want to say like 4 years ago. I used it like, I guess, kind of extensively for like one season. And then I didn't touch it until this year. And you're right, because you got to slow down. You have to kind of think about what you're doing. And, you know, I'm still an amateur. But once you get that, like that one cast that feels good, like, ooh, that felt pretty good. And I was catching tons of bluegills. And I was having a blast. Normally, bluegills on your conventional setup, it's like, whatever. But bluegill on a fly rod, it just, I don't know, it's totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, in situations like lake fishing for trout, so a huge percent, I mean, I'm almost going to say 90%, which is probably not factual, but I'm going to say it anyway. Let's say 70 to 90% of a trout's diet for a significant portion of the year is a chronomid, which is the larval stage of a midge fly. That is impossible to do with a conventional rod or a spinning rod. And so I can honestly tell you that a fly fisherman in most trout lakes will hands down outfish. If the bite is on, if the fish are focused on chronomids for May and June, if there was a tournament, you know, bass tournaments, if there was a trout tournament, and I had to go up against the bass, you know, the best bass spin fisher, I'm sorry, best trout spin fishers in the world, and I had to do it with a chronomid, I would pay the entry fee to compete against them with chronomids and fly rod.
You know what? I can't think of too many trout fishing tournaments off the top of my head.
No.
Yeah, interesting.
Oh. But the fish don't hone in on worms and leeches, like maybe in the morning, you know, or spinners or, you know, little flatfish or whatever, but trout focus in on bugs. And the only way to really imitate those bugs, provided it's not a worm hatch, is to a worm hatch. I say that tongue in cheek, by the way. Worms are hatching, but you know what I mean? Is to put on a fly. So yeah, there's all sorts of reasons. So I think a lot of people think that it's pretentious. And I think nowadays with social media, it has gotten pretentious in a lot of ways. But to me, from my days as a teenager, just being a fish bum to now, it's all about what does the job and what is the job? Am I trying to get meat or am I trying to relax and get back to my roots today? So I think to be a really skilled angler in person, you just have to know how to do it all or try it all.
So if people are wondering, because I know you were talking about the North, because you're from Canada originally, correct?
I'm still from Canada and I'm stuck here with COVID. The most of it, but I am very much missing home.
And yes, and then you go to, because you're in you go to New Zealand, you travel quite a bit. I'm just, for my personal sake, I'm just curious, what's the biggest difference in fishing from Canada to New Zealand to Australia to, you know, where you're located? I just want to know, what's the biggest difference? Are the fish the same? I mean, obviously, there's going to be different types of species, but I'm just like, do you attack it differently or how does it work?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I'd say New Zealand and Canada are a lot more similar than Australia. Okay. Australia, there's a lot of estuary fishing, a lot of brackish water, tidal. Like my whole life feels like it's based around tides these days. Went fishing a couple of days ago. We were fishing for estuary perch and Australian bass, which aren't technically, they're not biologically a bass, but that's what they're called. And we're focused on tides, you know? And then same with, we were up in the Kimberley a few weeks ago, which is just the coolest, most amazing place, I think, in the world, one of them anyway. Totally tidal based. You can't get, you've got to watch when you put your boat in and when you take your boat out. Whereas in Canada, we're focused, I mean, Canada's a big place. there's a lot of fisheries, but the fisheries I'm referring to right now are specifically salmon and steelhead, which is where my heart is. It's a lot, there is some tidal influence, but for the most part, it's typically a river system and you just focus on the season. Anyway, I'm getting long-winded, but New Zealand and Canada or British Columbia specifically both have rivers that have fish that can go to the ocean and back. Okay. That's called an anadromous fish. And so I think my passion is knowing that there's anadromous fish with both of those countries, which makes me feel surprisingly at home in New Zealand, because it reminds me of Canada. But Australia is just a totally different beast. I will say Australia is the most underrated fishery in the world, in my opinion. So you see people come from everywhere to go to New Zealand, and then they totally bypass Australia. But Australia has got, I mean, they have everything from barramundi to the Murray cod, which is like, I would assume you guys probably like big fish that take hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Murray cod is just the badass of all of these fish, right? It's just like bass on steroids. They get up to, I mean, Google images Murray cod. They're as big as I am. When they take your fly or your lure underwater, it sounds like this. Literally, that's exactly what it sounds like someone slammed the car door.
Wow.
And they're only found in Australia, and they're found in rivers as big as my office. They just live in like puddles. They're just absolutely unbelievable. So yeah, you can go flats fishing here, you can go fishing for permit, barramundi, you're trying not to get eaten by crocodiles. Then there's the snowy mountains, which has trout, and then I could go on and on. Marlin fishing, the offshore fishing opportunities, sailfish, milkfish. Everything is in this country. It's unbelievable.
Is it as scary as the internet says Australia is?
It's funny you should ask that. So when I moved here, I thought for sure that it was going to be this just like what the internet shows. But Sydney people, no. Sydney is, no. Honestly, I think they'd be afraid of their shadow, some of these people. Then Australians are going to smack me. Look, I love you Aussies. Love you. I really love my rural Aussies, but the city Aussies, y'all need to toughen up a bit. I lived in the Northern Beaches when I first moved here, as much as I didn't particularly enjoy the Northern Beaches. And it was surprising just how mild it is. But yeah, as you start to venture out, it is as bad as the internet. I mean, you can't launch your boat. You can't go. I mean, you can't even like walking along the dock. You're walking on the dock in the Kimberley and you're going like this, making sure that the saltwater croc isn't going to eat you. I mean, you can't even, you're on the beaches. You go to the bathroom and you've got to be very careful to choose the right bathroom. I'm sorry, the right beach to go to the bathroom on, because these crocodiles will come right up on the sand and try to take you. It is insane. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Scary. And then there's all the other stuff.
Snakes, spiders.
I don't see those.
We did have a python living in our wall when we lived in the beaches. So that was interesting. And now living out here, now I live out in more of the bush. And yeah, like a spider this big to me is just every day.
Okay. So my previous episodes, people know listening, I'm not a huge fan of snakes. So when you just said that's like every day, not going to lie, I'm a little edgy.
Yeah, no, you have every right to be edgy. Encounters with snakes are not daily for me, but around here. Yeah, snakes are, they live here. We work around them.
You still got to go fishing. It doesn't matter. You still got to go fishing.
But you got to watch it, because you're on the banks, like Murray cod fishing, right? You'd be mad to walk along a cut bank, because you know sometimes the river cuts it down, and then kind of like even in a canal style situation. And you know, you're walking, when you're fishing, even in Iowa, probably you're fishing and you've got grass and stuff behind you. You don't think anything of it. Well, in Australia, you could be fishing and turn around, and if it's a cut bank and there's a snake there, like a big tiger or something, or just even a brown or whatever species is nearby, there are instances where they just strike and they'll bite you right in the face. Yeah, they don't want to. I mean, it's not like they're stalking you or anything. They're not like crocodiles, but it's real. Yeah. The snake situation is real for sure. You've got to be very, very cautious.
All right. So we go to Australia, we get hitting her up, hitting April up to take us around, kid.
Wear a full body suit, armored.
You want a local. You want a local. The local guys and gals know what's up.
I guess in Iowa, we don't have to worry about stuff killing us when we go fishing. So we're kind of relaxed, you know. Oh, we just turn our backs to everything. We don't have to watch where we step. But man, that sounds pretty wild.
The weirdest thing is the crocodiles. That's the weirdest one for me. Like sharks, okay, fine. Don't go out too deep. Got it. Snakes, all right. Watch where you're stepping. You know, don't fish for the cut bank. Okay, got it. Don't step over logs. Like, don't step into a brush pile, whatever you do, or over a big old tire or something. Noted. Mm-hmm. Spiders, meh, right? Just watch out for the funnel webs. But the crocodiles, I mean, were you just walking a white sandy beach? Then this animal who's been stalking your movements for the last few days knows that at this time you're going to go for a walk and surprise, there he is. Like, they are no dummy, right? Those saltwater crocodiles are the real deal.
How big do they get?
Really, really big. I mean, 15 feet, really, really big. Yeah, they're a beast. So that's all north, right? So the cool thing is you can look at the map and go, all right, so what do I not want to encounter? Okay, well, I don't want to encounter a saltwater crocodile. Cool, then I won't go past this point. Sharks, okay, fine. Maybe you shouldn't go surfing if you don't want to be attacked by a shark. Like, you can avoid all the situations. It's not like all these animals are out to get you.
So you can mitigate your risk a little bit just by deciding where you want to go.
Yes. Yeah. There's some weird things. There's some like freak accidents with kangaroos. There'll be, and I'm not laughing at this. I swear I'm not, but it's hard not to laugh in shock. There's situations where people have been jogging and then all of a sudden there's like a kangaroo jumping alongside them. Cool. I'm running with the kangaroo. And then there's another one and people get beat up by kangaroos, just random freak accidents. But it's weird being a British Columbian girl in an Australian world. And so, because I do a lot of bow hunting, so I'm out in the bush a lot as it's starting to get dark. And so I'll see a big black rock or a big black stump and I'll be like, oh, a bear. You know, I just assume it's a bear. And then I'll be in Canada because I try to switch up. I try to spend equal times in both countries pre-COVID. And in Canada, I'll be in bear country and I'll see a stick and oh, snake. I just can't, my brain can't work fast enough with both the countries and the species.
Wow, that's crazy.
That is great. We're in middle Iowa, so we don't have to deal with this. So this is so awesome for us to hear someone that's giving us a different viewpoint of the world.
Well, what do you guys have to be afraid of? Hang on. Iowa would have black bears.
Go ahead, Kit.
Black bears is a rare occurrence in Iowa. Like, if one black bear shows up in Iowa, it's all over the news.
Really?
Yeah. And every year we usually have one or two bears that goes through the state and it's on the news. They track the movement of that bear from north to south.
The one bear.
So the only thing we got to worry about is people. Like, you know, some questionable people. Those are our biggest concerns. But other than that, wildlife.
Scary species for sure. I'm way more terrified of people than any of those other animals. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Other than some questionable people, we don't really have too much to worry about here. Yeah.
Right.
Not death wise. That's the thing. The biggest thing is like death. Like, am I afraid that something's going to happen if I go fishing right here, that death, that I can't go home? Yeah. It's very rare.
Right.
Do you ever get to ice fish up there in British Columbia? When you go back, do you ice fish at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did it for the first time 3 years ago, and I absolutely loved it. I thought I was going to hate it, but I was just, again, trying to eat, right? So what's the best thing to get the job done? It was winter, needed food, ice fishing. It was so much fun. Now, I will say that this, though. I've done both sorts of fishing where maybe, I don't know, and I don't do it enough to know any of the reasons. So I would assume the ice was thicker, or maybe there was snow on the ice, or whatever the reason was, it was dark, is my point. So I've done it where it was dark and you can't see. And then I've done it when it's light and it's almost like you look in the hole and it's glowing. It really is glowing. You can see everything that's happening. You see every fish that comes by to sniff your shrimp or your bait or whatever it is that you're using. That is so much fun. Like, one of my favorite things to do when it's dark and you can't see what's happening, it's not as much fun, depending on how much you're drinking. But yeah, the glowing is awesome. Yeah. Strongly recommend.
I agree with the drinking part.
Okay, so I'm gonna bring it back just a notch. So how did you get into the whole outdoors, like fishing, hunting? I think you're like into foraging and stuff too now, right? Mm. So how did you get into, like, was this something you've been introduced to as a kid, or is just something you just found as you were growing up?
Yeah, so mom and dad were not anglers. I mean, they fished for fun a little bit, but they were really into taking us out into the country. So we spent a lot of our weekends driving out to the country, or what was the country back then, and turning over rocks, hanging out of the river while dad was fishing worms. You know, going to collect dew worms with my dad was the thing. That was my favorite thing in the world, was to go out in the yard at night on the dewy grass and try to get, you know, creepy crawling night crawlers. And yeah, so we spent a lot of time outside. And then obviously every year we did, I say obviously like it's a known, but every year we would do a camping trip. We'd go to a lake in the interior, and it just kind of blossomed from there. So I don't know who's heard the story before, so I'll keep it. I'll tell you, but I won't dive into it. But basically, in a nutshell, my dad gave me a Plano box, big brown Plano box when I was younger. And it had a couple lures, a couple wedding bands and willow leaves and stuff like that in it. And I was just obsessed with this box. And I would sit on the floor at night while my family was watching like America's Funniest Home Videos. And I would rearrange all my stuff in my Plano box. And then the mall, you know, now I'm, you know, 10, 11, 12. The mall had a tackle shop next door to it. So when my friends would go to the mall, I would go and spend my allowance at the tackle shop. So I'd buy Jensen eggs and weird marshmallows that stunk and all the weird things to build up my Plano box. And then it just kind of grew from there. I started counting down, wanting to get my driver's license. And then when I turned 16, that was it. I was gone. And I knew I was going to do it professionally by 18, and knew that the only way to do that was I had to become good. And so I devoted every moment on the river, skipped school, skipped college, all those things that I shouldn't have done, drove my parents crazy, and then started my company. At the time, I wasn't guiding. I started just as a sales rep, actually, for different fly tackle. I started Fly Gal Ventures in 2007. And then from there, it just blossomed. I was guiding for another company, broke free to be my own guide. And it all just went from there. Did my 10 years of guiding. And at the same, I think year 8 of guiding, I started the podcast, which was, if I had to back it up a bit, I in the 8th year of guiding, I started a television series. And in the television series, I was interviewing all these guys and gals and leaving so much of the interview on the ground. I thought, I've got to turn these into podcasts. Mm. So then it went from there. And then I stopped guiding. And then the podcast and travel and teaching kept going on and on. You know, social media is blossoming at this point, which is, of course, helping with marketing and different opportunities. And then I started Anchored Outdoors. So it's been a long, old... Yeah.
So you sound like every entrepreneur's dream. You're an entrepreneur, and that's, it's bad. I don't know if you've been on many entrepreneur podcasts, which you probably should be. If you should, you need to be. But that's it. You're exactly right. You did what you love, and you had a huge passion for it, but you also grinded. Like you were saying, you had to be really good at something. And yeah, you skip school a little bit here and there, but you know what? You follow your passion, not necessarily. I mean, how are you going to get good fishing when you're in a lecture? Sorry.
That's right. No. And you have to crunch, like, it's all, I love that you're talking about. So I love business and talking business. I mean, we won't do that here, but you know, it's just a series of pivots, right? You have to pivot, not just with the times, but with your own and trends, but with your own evolution. And at one point I was in school and I had this, at that point I had switched and was trying to take some biology stuff to maybe get a job in fisheries, because I thought at the time, you know, freshly out of high school, I just thought that maybe if I wanted to fish every day, because that's all I cared about at the time, is I just wanted to fish every day and be able to pay bills so that I could fish every day. So I thought, well, the only way to do this, because I knew I couldn't guide my whole life. Guiding, I just knew that my body couldn't handle guiding till I was 70, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll get a government job and work in as a biologist or something. And then I ended up getting an opportunity to go and do some sort of field work. And I realized that most of it was going to be done in the office for not that much money. And that was when I kind of thought to myself, why am I spending all this money in school when I think I could probably make a business out of this. And anyway, there's a whole lot of pains and trials and tribulations that go on in through that period of time. But yeah, there's a moment in every business person's life, I think, when they look at what it is that they're striving towards, that they're told they're supposed to do from society, and they realize that that doesn't make sense. Or like, you know, grinding 9 to 5 at the office and driving 2 hours there and 2 hours back. At some point you look at it and you could just go, this, I know everyone's telling me this is what I'm supposed to do, but it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And you're not happy. No, I'm with you 100% in regards to, you know, doing, and you, some of the decisions you probably made probably didn't pan out. Obviously we all go through that in life, whether you're a business person or not, but and it's props to you that you're able to find a way to figure it out. You know what I mean? So it's kind of, it's really cool. And I'm very grateful that you started your podcast. I don't know how long I started listening to your podcast. It's been a while. I mean, I've listened to it. I mean, I've heard, I think you had a Meat Eater on there once. I think Steve Rinella, I don't know if people ever watched No Meat Eater. It was pretty cool. You had him on. I think you had Survivor Man, right?
Les Stroud.
So yeah. Yeah. That was so cool. I mean, just for you to get those type of guys that are, they're huge. I mean, technically they got a huge following, but then for you to, you know, venture out and get them on your podcast and just interview them, I bet you there's a lot of stuff that's probably not even in those podcasts that was recorded that you learned, and you're just, you know, just the information that they were giving. And that's why I tell everybody that, you know, why do you, me, and Kit do this podcasting when we first started a little bit over a year or so ago? And it's because, honestly, it's because I wanted to get better at fishing, number one. And then number two, I love beer. So, you know, I cracked up another crack beer already. And then my thoughts are like, okay, greatest thing ever. I can learn how to get better at fishing and meet people like yourself, business oriented, because I started my own business, whatever, and just learn fishing, all of it at once. I can do it all at once, and that's why I'm doing it. And I'm just like, and the next thing you know, a kid over here like, sure, it's fine, whatever. He's got, you know, he got a YouTube channel, sure, whatever, man, I'll do this podcast with you. And the next thing you know, like, all right, people started just hitting us up like, God, that's awesome, you guys just talk shit about fishing and beer, man. We love that. And you know, but like you said, I'm so glad that you started that podcast and everything, and it's growing, and it took you to the next level. I guess, you know, in a way it kind of did, right? So the podcast, if you don't mind, like, it's a fishing podcast. Can you explain a little bit about your podcast? What, I mean, the interviews and the people you have, it's not just fishing. You have a lot of different people from different industries, you know, whether it's, you know, bow hunting, hunting, forage. It's just so cool. And can you just tell us a little bit about that podcast and what that's all about?
Yeah. So I try to keep it, you know, 10 to 1. So for every one person who maybe is a hunter, maybe more like 15 to 1 these days, I try to have mostly fishing, because that's obviously where my comfort level is. But the show, yes, it's there to help people learn, but it's not an educational series. And some people don't like that. Some people want to know what your favorite 5-weight fly rod is and your favorite go-to fly. And there are resources for that. Mm-hmm. And I encourage people to listen to those shows. But for me, look, I always just want to create a product that I would want, right? Same with the membership, same with the masterclasses, same with the podcast. It's what would I want to hear? Well, I like podcasts because I like to be inspired, or scared shitless with like a crime podcast. But for the moment, with podcasts, I like to be inspired. And so it was painful for me to have my television series and spend my time with all of these men and women who, like I said, a lot of them are quite old, who had never shared their story before, not publicly. They didn't have anywhere to share it publicly. And to walk away from those stories feeling humble and inspired, and just, you know, kind of in awe that these people exist. And that's really what the show is about, is telling stories and inspiring you to go, oh, well, hang on. Carrie Berkheimer, one of the best rod builders in the world, was packaging, you know, working night shifts at a factory packaging. And, you know, Tom Brown III, who's this amazing survivalist and survival instructor, was a heroin addict. I mean, these are Chad Brown, this amazing guy, does this amazing work with his company. He was going to kill himself on the river. So, you know, we've got these situations where, sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on YouTube. I know YouTube like questions, anything like that. So you
might
need to.
Oh shit. We might get that. Well, I don't know. We have, we haven't got a lot of stuff bleeped out yet or X'd out yet. So nah, you're fine.
They demonetize anything that's about, you know, taking your own life. But the point is these people are inspiring. And, you know, the show brings me to tears all the time. And it brings guests to tears all the time. It's a storytelling show. And yeah, I just hope that it inspires some people. That's really what the whole purpose of the show is.
Mad props. No, I mean, yeah. I can tell that when you say you cry, when I listen to your podcast, I could really tell that you're listening, not just talking and interviewing just to get through and just put it out there. I can hear that you're listening to them. And that's it makes a big difference. I listen to other podcasts like, dude, you're just, you know, you're just doing it just to do it. And you're not even really listening. So, yeah, mad props that you do that. At least listen. And that's kind of cool. And I think that the way you engage with the person you're doing it with, it makes a huge difference in regards to, at least to me. I don't know. I can tell.
Well, they're interesting. Like, I just think, what a shame and a crime if you have these people in front of you and they're sharing their whole life with you. And it can make you a better person if you listen.
Yeah.
And to be so excited about saying your next point or so full of yourself that I don't know. I think listening is something that's just becoming, back in the day, I mean, we're both around the same age. Listening wasn't a big skill back then. I mean, almost everybody knew how to listen to some degree, but now it feels like with the short attention spans, listening is really hard for people. And that's scary to me.
No, you're right. The next generation, I don't even know my kids are. They're going to listen like you're saying. I'm not saying you can hear it, but are you listening? Everybody hears it. Well, I get yelled at all the time by my wife and my friends. They're like, dude, we're telling you, Grandy, but do I really, am I listening to it or am I just hearing it? So, no.
Well, my fear is that if we're not listening, people aren't going to tell stories anymore.
Right.
And our entire history and everything is based around the story. I mean, I was talking about this the other day. Why are Instagram influencers oftentimes so disliked? And because I have another show called Into the Backing, and it's totally different. It's four of us sit down, we take a contentious subject and we hash it out. Right. And I didn't feel like it was anchored style. So I turned it into the backing. It's after hours. We go right in deep into the backing of a subject. And we were talking about influencers. Why do they have such a bad rap? And the feedback's been interesting. And the big, what we've really come up with is it's the story. And people on social media, let's take influencers out of the equation and just talk about social media. When you remove the story and just focus on the trophy or the one, you know, pivotal moment, it takes away from the story. So my fear is if people aren't listening, people are going to stop telling stories. And if that's the case, then where is our future headed? Story is so much more than just movies and, you know, like nights out shooting shit with friends. Stories, if you really break down the success of certain people and the history of certain industries and just us as a society, stories are so important. So we need to keep them, but we need to be able to listen to the stories to keep the stories rolling, if that makes sense.
That's why I love podcasts. That's why I love podcasting. And it's, and you know, I tell everybody every night and day, like, if you haven't started to listen to podcasting, you should. You're going to learn some stuff that you'll never have thought of or even, you know, thought that you'd be interested in. Number one, number two, like you're just saying, you would hear so many amazing stories that it will just blow your mind and it will just inspire you. That's pretty cool. And then, I mean, right, Kate, we had Hank Kohler that was on our podcast. I didn't even know anything about this gentleman. I knew because we had the Iowa DNR guy come in here. He goes, dude, one of my best friends, he's got a story you guys are going to want to hear. And we're like, okay, you know, we're open to it, whatever the case. Does he like beer? Great. We're going to drink beer and he loves the fish. But his story and what he's doing, it inspired me. And I think because Kit myself, you know, after that interview and or that podcast episode we had with him, we were just talking like, geez, this guy's story was utterly amazing. It was just like, it was badass amazing what he's gone through. And just telling us everything and what he's going through right now too. It's just like, nah, it was just listening to it and hearing that. And that's why I tell everybody, listen to podcasts. I'm telling you, I think it's the next biggest form.
Well, the thing about podcasts, and this is what I like about it, and I've never actually said this out loud, so excuse me if it appears jumpy, but podcasts to me are kind of like sticking it to the man. So, and I'll explain. So nowadays we live in a world where, what do they say? The average attention span is 8 seconds or something crazy.
At best. Yeah. Best.
So you can't shut off marketing. You're flying in the airplane, they are jamming advertisements down your throat in a screen that you can't shut off. Mm. You just can't escape the noise, right? And everything is fast. The media breaks it up into sound bites. Social media breaks it up into sound bites, advertisements, sound bites. Everything is sound bite, sound bite, sound bite. It's so hard to get the truth these days in long form conversation. Mm-hmm. And podcasts force people to practice listening and to practice thinking and to practice focusing. And I think that a lot of the world, I don't want to dive down like conspiracy theory avenue here, but I think that distraction is key for a lot of people right now. Is if people are so distracted and so busy about trying to get their next photo up on Instagram that has an attention span of 8 seconds, that people don't really see what's going on in a lot of ways. And I think podcasts force us to still remain as, you know, intelligent human beings who can focus on a topic and have this long form discussion, which does lead to great things, depending on the subject matter, obviously. Mm. But it's just a great practice platform.
Agreed.
Stay engaged.
So, with the whole COVID situation, so how does that change the landscape of podcasts? Because, like you said before, you'd go into somebody's home, you know, do the podcast with them, but now with like travel restrictions and things like that, I feel like it kind of changes things up because. Like, yeah, you guys are on lockdown. You can't go to Iowa and come sit down with us and do a podcast. What's your thoughts on that whole situation there?
Yeah, it's been hard. I know a lot of people are like, April, now you can sit down remotely with these people. Let's get so-and-so and so-and-so on the show. But I do know from experience that even though we're connecting and we can see each other, it's still not the same as you saying, hey, come on and have a seat. I'll be there in a minute. Just talk to my wife or my husband for a couple of minutes. Or me being there meeting your kids and playing dolls or something, right? And so for me, how I've countered that is I've tried to have people on the show who I've already had relationships with. Mm. And so, yes, does that mean that I don't have a lot of the star factor going on and a lot of people who have been on my list for years? Yes, but I know that it's going to be slightly empty. I'd rather wait till I can travel a bit to get those people so that we can have those after hour moments. So most of the people I've had on the show since COVID are people I already know and have known for a long time.
No, I think that's a big thing to do podcasts. And like you're just saying, we jumped into this thinking in mind, we're going to do it in person. But then like you just said, COVID hit us too. At the same time, when we were kind of doing this, we're like, oh shoot, we got to do it like this. But when we do, every time I mean, you enjoy it more live than anything, right, Kit? I think when we're just in front of each other.
It's way different. I feel like you connect with the other person way more instead of, you know, looking at a screen. You know, you're sitting there, you're in their presence. You kind of feel their vibe or whatever.
Because I mean, we do episodes just me and him, and it's totally different where we're here and then we're in front of each other. It's just like, you know, just talking shit, having a beer. Technically, that's what we really do, talking shit and, you know, talking fishing, having a beer. But when we kind of on online, it loses a little bit of its I wouldn't say luster, but I guess you can say that. I mean that's just kind of how it is. It just loses a little bit of that factor. Hopefully it we'll see in a couple months, years, who knows.
But look, it's a good alternative. I mean, anything's better than podcasts going away.
True.
And so as long as people are still engaging and taking the time out of their day to sit down and not only have this conversation, but listen to the conversation for anyone, you know, who's listening to it.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing too is I'm glad that the cool thing we tell our sponsors, you know, for our podcast, like, we're going to be ourselves. I mean, we get the opportunity to edit and produce it ourselves. We're going to do it our way because we're not going to be fake in a way. And just to fit your whatever your vision. We're going to do it our thing. But if you want to jump on board with us, great. You know, help us out. But we're just going to do it our way. We love this. We're having fun with it. And we're going to always do it that way. And we told them, you know, a lot of our sponsors are like, okay, great. Cool. And that's the cool thing about podcasting, so that you have full autonomy, control of how you want to do it. If, you know, one episode, hey, Kit, let's just talk about this. We're going to talk about fishing, you know, whatever, of catfish. That's it. We're talking about nothing but catfish. I don't know if our sponsor likes it or not. I don't give a shit. We're talking catfish and we're talking catfish lures. We're going to talk about what we're going to do on our trip. That's it. We have fun with that. And then that's the cool thing, that you have full control. And I think a lot of people, you know, take it for granted, I guess, in a way, that podcast, it's growing. I don't know. The last time I seen it was a couple, what is it, like 6 million, I think, podcasts out there. Or it might be, I might be wrong on that. It might be less than that.
It's been a huge jump since COVID, the amount of people.
But I think it's still like active podcasts, like, you know, like the last 60 days of active episodes, it's like half of that or barely a million. So if anybody's wondering, go look at YouTube, how many channels. I think you're talking YouTube is like, I don't know how many, like 20 million maybe channels. Who knows? But podcast is still in the baby stages. Yeah, right. I think it's, and like you're saying, it's so cool that we get to hear all these stories. That's why I love this thing. We get to hear your story. We get to hear all these other people's stories. And it's, to me, it's like, it's inspirational, man. It's really badass just to hear where you came from, where you are, and how you became. And to me, cool. And then on top of that, you're teaching me how to get into fly fishing. I'm excited. I'm telling my wife, I'm getting.
You're gonna have to go out with Kit and then really give it a go.
All right.
Yeah, we'll freaking struggle to cast and catch hopefully a couple of fish here and there.
But the thing about fly fishing is you need to know that even when you think you know everything, you don't. I mean, there's no top, right? There's always something to learn. So you just have to just open your mind to being frustrated. And honestly, if I had one bit of advice for you, it would be to enjoy the beginning stages, because it is, remember what you said, Kit, when you said that when it finally goes out, you're like, oh yes.
Yeah.
That enjoy those, because you don't get, I mean, it's like having a baby, right? You don't get those stages back. Once they're gone, they're gone. So just take your time and enjoy it. And look, it's not always easy, but it's not always hard either. I know when I started, the guys, because at the time it was mostly guys, right? Mm-hmm. And it was, oh, it's so hard. I don't know if this is for you, right? And oh, but then to do that, you need to double haul, because to get distance, you need to have extra, I know I'll save you all the details, but you basically need to generate additional line speed. And to do that, it requires two hands. And so this is called double hauling. And I remember being so confused by this, right? And I still lived at home when I started fly fishing. I was young and I had this VHS tape that someone gave to me about learning how to fly fish. And so I would sit on the edge of my bed watching the VHS tape and trying to practice. And so my mom and I drove to the lake. I was going to put my double hauling to the test on the lake. And I picked up the rod and I double hauled, because I'd already built that muscle memory from sitting on the couch or from on my bed. And we both were jumping up and down. And I said, but I must be doing it wrong, because it was way too easy. And I mean, granted, it wasn't perfect, but the whole, it's so hard. It's so hard. I think that a lot of people build it up because maybe it was hard for them, or maybe they don't want you doing it, or maybe it makes them feel really good to be so talented at something and know that maybe you're new to it. I don't know what people's reasoning is for making something harder than it is, but just, it doesn't have to be as hard as people make it out to be. And also the big thing to remember is you don't need to cast farther than 30 feet usually.
Okay.
Most of the time. And half the time you're in a situation where you just do this thing called a roll cast, where your line stays in the water and you just basically roll it out. You don't always need to aerialize all the line like you see in the commercials with the fancy yellow line behind you or in front of you. So fishing and casting are two, and this is something you do learn once you're in the industry, is fishing and casting, they definitely go hand in hand, and the best anglers can do both. But they are also separate things. Some of the best casters in the world don't really do that much fishing. They spend a lot of time practicing and preparing for casting competitions. And some of the best fishers in the world are mediocre casters, but they catch the most fish. So they go best hand in hand, but they are a lot of times slightly different, which is, you're giving me a confused look, because it's different, right? You'll see a bass guy. Well, I guess you might see a spinning guy target practicing a lot.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Do they? No. I mean, they usually
maybe.
I mean, what you just explained to me, I guess I compare it to golfing. That there's these, you know, long drive competition, but they're not the greatest golfers. Golfers don't hit the ball the farthest. So it's that's how I compare it to. So
when you practice casting, on a field. You'll never see someone put on a fly to go practice their distance casting, because it's typically what competitions are, distance. You never see someone trying to practice their distance casting while fishing. They're in a field doing it. And so it's easy to get to become absorbed with the casting. Right. So what do you want to do today, Joe? Do you want to go fishing, or do you want to go see if we can get that extra 5 feet on your cast in the field? So it does accidentally sometimes start to veer away. So anyway, just know that it doesn't have to be as hard as the internet makes it out to be.
Gotcha. This is my last question, and it might be a long-winded question. So my kids were here earlier. The reason why they really wanted to meet you, they really did. They wanted, because it's kind of hard once in a while to get a female fisherman or a female person in the industry that knows what the hell she's talking about and that just knows fishing, right? And we had Christine Fisher on our podcast before, and she was on
your,
bad. She's badass. And
she is good.
And I have four daughters. So, you know, my real question is, I do see it a little bit more and more that females are getting into fishing. I think it's actually because of social media, and I think because of YouTube is actually helping show the younger generation of females that, hey, you can do it if you like it. You know what I'm saying? You can be really good at it and be successful at it. But do you still feel yourself as a female in the industry that's predominantly male? We all know that. I mean, there's no hidden thing about that. But do you still feel that is a big factor? And when I say factor of, I mean, success factor of female anglers like yourself or anybody who's trying to, whether start a business or get in professional fishing, do you still see that as a possible wall, deterrent, or do you see it's like, you know what, that was 20 years ago, it's not the same thing anymore? I don't know.
You need to remember that a large part of the industry and the sport, I hate the word sport, but the sport in general, is still older men.
Yes.
So even though it's been 20 years, a lot of the 70-year-olds who have decided that you don't deserve to be there, they were only 50. They were 50 then. They're still the same person. It's been 20 years for me. And so for a lot of us who are 40, 20 years makes a big difference from 20 to 40, but the 50 to 70 is not quite as big of a difference. So my answer to you is, in my opinion, in my experience anyway, because I can't speak on behalf of other women, but in my experience with myself and my girlfriends in the industry, it's a double-edged sword. So on one hand, you get opportunities that a lot of women get opportunities that are easier to come by than maybe it is for some men, right, wrong, or otherwise. That's just business. On the other side of things, you have to be better, in my opinion, to get any recognition. So I know, or to be celebrated. So I know for a fact that if I do a spay cast on the river and another guy in the industry does the same cast on the river, he is celebrated as a legend. And with me, they're like, oh, but did you see, she applied 1% extra pressure on her upper hand. Maybe she should have, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that's actually a real comment that I've ever heard, but you just have to be so bloody good. And I think that's why the rise and fall of women in the industry is so prominent. You know, they rise fast and they fall just as fast, because it's this sword. It's easy to climb up one side and easy to fall down the other. So you really, and I'm actually right in the middle of writing an article about this for Outdoor Life, because they wanted me to write an article on what have I learned so that other women and young men can learn from my mistakes. And look, you have to be really, really, really good. So I do think that wall is still very much there. I think the opportunities come easily, but I also think that now more and more companies are not giving I'm not going to say women, because I'm going to put high profile men and women in the same category here. A lot of companies are not giving high profile men and women the opportunities that maybe they do deserve because of the fear of cancel culture, the fear of, you know, that person has such a high has such a huge audience. What if something goes wrong? What if they trash talk? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they wouldn't want to give somebody that platform. So I think my answer to you is yes, the wall is still there. Yes, the opportunities come, but they also don't come in a lot of ways. Well, I have lost a lot, or have not had a lot of opportunities for a number of reasons. One, I'm too high profile. Two, what was one of the ones I heard? I'm just too, you know, what was the word that they had? Just too contentious. Like it was too variable. So many people like me and dislike me. They just didn't want to be problematic. Right. They just didn't want to, even though I'm not a problematic person, especially now, I'm pretty boring these days, but they just didn't want to deal with the people who are like, oh my goodness, why would you give it to her? Right. Cause look, I have haters who have hated me for 20 years.
Really?
Literally, they've hated me for 20 years. And it's like, guys, I was 20 back then, you know, things have changed. But like I said, when they're 50 and they're 70 now, I mean, just the same old person, right? Just with, yeah. So anyway, did that answer your question? Yes, the wall is there. It's not just for women. It's there for a lot of young men and women.
It answers that I can understand. I figured as much, but I just wasn't sure. Hopefully it's going in the right direction, kind of. But like you're saying, it's a double-edged sword, so I don't know.
It's tough because a lot of these men and women do it to themselves.
Yes.
Right? Like self-included. When I was in my 20s, I did a lot of stupid shit that I would never do nowadays. So yes, I might have a hater, but that, I'm not saying that person didn't have a reason to hate me. Like I did a lot of stupid things, but you know, people do evolve. So I think that a lot of the walls that are there, or the wall that is there, unfortunately, it's not necessarily there for the wrong reasons. A lot of the people who are out there trying to forge a career in the outdoors, some of them are doing some real stupid things, right? Like you don't need to be naked to do it. You don't need to kill an animal and mount it or do something obnoxious to turn off the rest of the industry. You don't need to make it all about you. You don't need to have it be a flash moment. You can tell a story. Your page doesn't need to be all grip and grins of all the awesome trout that you're fishing and painting an unrealistic image. You know, I just think we need to bring it back a little and be a little bit more authentic. And then maybe it won't be such a steep of a sword of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I didn't even realize being too high profile was a thing, honestly. Cause I always thought like, oh, you know, the higher the profile, the more exposure. But yeah, I guess now that I think about it, you know, there's sometimes there could be a price to pay for that, because if they slip up, then that's a lot of bad exposure.
Mm-hmm. Companies are afraid that you'll take their business. So there's that. I faced that when I guided for somebody else. There was fear as I started to become more high profile that I was going to take their customers. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, in guiding, that does happen a lot. So I understand the fear. But again, I mean, cancel culture is very real, and it's not new. It's been around for a while, but in the form that it is now, if a company invests all their stake in you and you go and you do something stupid, because it does happen, or perceived to be stupid, you know, a company can come crumbling down. So a lot of companies are looking more now at micro influencers and they're trying to diversify their portfolio. We'll just put it that way.
Well, you know, social media plays a major part of that, because like you're saying, like back in the day, yes, it would still hurt if you did something wrong, but now it's like instant. The world knows if you said a wrong word or a wrong sentence, and that it could destroy, like you're just saying, any brand, one person. Mm-hmm. And I get that. Sucks that we're in a society in a way that you can't even speak your mind at sometimes, because you're so afraid the backlash.
So have you found that with podcasting? I know my show I've had to take a big step back.
Well, we're not big enough that I don't give a shit. So this is the thing. Well, I mean, other podcasts I listen to, yes. I've actually seen a lot of podcasts change. I'm like, I don't even listen to them anymore or whatever the case. Mm-hmm. It's like, the hell, you know what happened? Because it's not the same. You can tell that they're just like slowly backing up of what they're saying. Yes, they're coming back towards a line, but I'm not saying say anything outrageous. I mean, technically, we drink beer and talk fishing. I can't really see us saying anything that's going to really offend people, but we could, or who knows? But we're so minute that I don't think we're still going to say our shit. I don't know, man. If they're gonna
hear it though in episodes, right? You hear it. I know for me, I have to start so many sentences now with, I apologize that I'm not very politically correct. I am not very good at this. So I'm sorry if I offend you, but I still ask the question, but it's just so cringy, right? Like you have to, I'm so afraid of offending race, gender, politics, you know, I still push through it and I ask the questions anyway, but you have to make it clear. It's hard to have a free flowing long form conversation when you're constantly being like, hey, before I ask you this, just so you know, it's going to be awkward.
That's spot on. No, you're spot on because we do say that. We're just like, well, I know a lot of people aren't going to like this, but anyways, we're going to say this. And it's like, technically, when we have a conversation, would I have said that? Hey, I'm not sure if anybody's going to be happy with what I'm about to ask you or say, you know, but technically, yeah, no, I catch us doing that here, but it's just, it almost feels like the norm that you have to give people.
You used to be able to just have an opinion and learn through long form conversation. Like you say your opinion and then the person answers and then together you learn and evolve. But now, again, this brings me back to this crazy, my conspiracy theory, you know, avenue of sound bites. You can ask the question and then they edit everything else out and they focus on your, you know, your 30 second spot where you spoke. So it's a real bummer.
They try to paint a picture with what you said with the soundbite thing.
Yeah. So, you know, we have, like I said, we're lucky that we're small enough that we haven't had backlash. At least that I know of. Maybe they did, but they never said anything to us. But like I said, I don't think we've ever really touched anything controversial, at least that I can think of, like too big. Like they're like, holy shit, we're not listening to these guys no more. But or freaking, we love these guys. You know, we've never heard anything that crazy yet. But till that day that happens, I don't know how are we gonna. Are we going to change? Are we not? Depends how big we are, I guess. I mean, at the end of the day, it all depends. I hope not. I don't think we're ever going to want to change our platform of how we do things. But I don't know what's going to happen 5-10 years down the road. Who knows? Podcasts might even be super controlled in 5-10 years, which I could see that happening too. But that's different podcast another day.
Who's on conspiracy theory mode now?
So, I know we talk about that one offline, April, but that's just my mind just going weird.
Ooh, you got my brain ticking. You'll have to tell me more in a day.
But dude, this is so awesome just to have you. I mean, Kit, do you have anything for April? I mean, she's been a blast to have. I mean, I learned a lot of business stuff, fishing stuff. I'm getting a fly fishing rod. I don't care. I'm going to tell the wife. I'm like, all right, my birthday's next week. I got a catfishing trip with this guy, but I think I'm jumping into fly fishing, man. But
you have a catfishing trip?
Yeah, we're going in a couple
this
days.
Week. This week.
It's coming.
Can you noodle for them there?
So we're going to Kansas. I'm not sure if we can noodle for them there, because in Iowa noodling is illegal. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we could do it in Kansas. Maybe it seems like a southern United States kind of deal.
Yeah, but we're going to Kansas, so it's I don't know. We can look into it. We'll let you know. We'll find out. But we're not going to be, because we're going to be on our kayaks. So we're going to be kayak fishing for some, hopefully, cross your fingers, monster blue catfish. Hopefully.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's our trip. And
don't pack your fly rod. Do it for the best tool for the job. Don't pack your fly rod for that one.
But I'm gonna go get a fly rod, and I think I'm gonna jump into it because I think you convinced me for sure. I was on the edge, wasn't sure, but I'm there. I think I jumped over it, so I'm gonna have this guy go teach me a few things here and there.
We'll learn.
We'll be teaching your girls too. Like, talk about family time. That's gonna be so. It's gonna be frustrating, but also fun.
I agree. But yeah, anything else for April, Kit?
I think I mean, like, I know that fly fishing rod of mine is still there, and I do want to take that out more, if not just to catch bait for other fish, like white bass, bluegills. I think crappie would be pretty cool on a fly rod. I don't know. Is that really a big thing? Crappies on a fly rod?
Yep, yeah. They're pretty easy on a fly rod. Yeah.
Okay. Easy, huh?
I know.
Relative. It's all relative.
Anyway, but I mean, who knows? I don't live over there. To me, catching a few is easy, but.
Okay.
I mean, catching a few is a good day. I don't know how many crappie do you catch in a day with gear?
I'd say like 10. I'd call 10 a good day.
Okay. Yeah. Give it a go. Let me know what
yeah,
you think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to try it. But yeah, anyway, so if our audience wants to get a hold of you or find out more about you, like where can they go, you know?
Yeah, well, both my personal website and Anchored are currently in the process of being redone, which will probably be a few weeks after, or probably a month or so after this is published. So you can go to anchoredoutdoors.com or to aprilvokey.com or obviously anything on social. But look, if you want to honestly reach me and truly be able to have my attention, just go to anchoredoutdoors.com and contact you will find me.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll put links for all that stuff when we post this.
Yeah. And we'll post it on like YouTube and all the our podcasts and everything, Spotify.
And I'm trying to grow my YouTube channel because it gets yes. more attention on my instructors too. Right. And that's, it's a community. So yeah, I never have said this before, but I would love for you to subscribe to my YouTube channel.
There you go. And hey, your YouTube channel is it's growing. So yeah, definitely.
You know what I did? That was so stupid. I never cared about YouTube back in the day. Like I just didn't care about it. And so what I did one time was I spent 2 days and I uploaded 120 podcast episodes onto YouTube.
Oh shit. Okay.
In 2 days, and I just lost half my following. Everyone was like, unsubscribe. And now I actually care. And I'm going, oh, why did I do that? And I'm not, you know, I need to make more videos, but it's all part of it. So it's all in the schedule to make more videos and really get back in the saddle.
Yeah. And we'll put all the links and you know what, you guys really should go check out the podcast. You guys got to really check out April's podcast. It's really cool. The stories are amazing. The people you have there is amazing. And I love what you're doing. I love what you're all about in regards to your entrepreneurship, your business sense. It's really cool. Inspiring to me. I mean, I don't know if you get that a lot, but it is inspiring to me. It's pretty cool. And I followed you for a while. Been wanting to get you on. I know you're super busy, obviously. But it was so cool that you gave us the time and just the opportunity to pick your mind, learn a little bit about fly fishing, learn a little bit about the business aspect, podcasting, all that stuff, because you got something that I can see it's going to keep growing. So in a good positive sense. So that's cool. Obviously you got a great head on your shoulder. So keep grinding, keep doing what you're doing, April. And like I said, thank you so much for just joining us here on Beer Fish Fanatics. And next time for sure, you're having a beer with us. So
yes, I will be there. Hopefully life normalizes soon and we can get back to airplanes.
Understand. Right, cool. Thank you so much, April.
Thanks, right, guys. Thank you.